What up, people? It's your boy Justin Ramos here with a brand new episode of Just a Kid from Brooklyn. It's your boy. Yo, we got my man Quan Wiggins all the way from North Carolina, Bull City all day, bro. What's up, Quan?
You crazy, man. I'm from East New York, bro.
Yeah, right. I'm from East New York. You ain't from
my bad.
New York.
I said the wrong hood. I mean, I'm from Brownsville.
You from Not sounding like that. Say Brownsville again.
I'm from Brownsville.
Yeah, No, Brownsville never ran, never will. You say I'm from Brownsville.
All right.
What's up, man?
I don't mean nothing. I'm from the Ville. That's where the mother.
Never ran, never will?
Nope.
What's good, man? How you been?
I've been chilling, man. You know, just trying to survive out here in these in this pandemic world. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What have you been doing this whole time?
Watching the news, studying Republicans and Democrats, and you know, listening to that both sides of the aisles. You know, I work on writing and do a little film study, and you know, I don't know, just trying to educate myself as I, you know, trying to figure out what's gonna be next when all this is over.
Right. So we met, oh my God, what did we met in 2013, right?
In 2013, yeah.
Jeez, Identity Bar.
Is that where? That's the thing I can't remember. I can't remember the where.
I think it was Identity Bar. It might have been Bungalow Lounge in Astoria. Yeah. It was one of the two places.
Yeah, Bungalow sounds more likely because... Yeah. I remember when I first started, I could never tell the difference between you and Petey. I ain't never know who was who, and I just kept. And it took me a while before I knew y'all apart.
Yo! People still confuse me and Petey Diabro.
Now, I don't see it at this point, but back then, it was like, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I know, because we both wear hoodies.
And
we both
hats.
Always got a hat on. We both yellow.
And that was the main indicator. I was like, yo, I don't know. All I see is two bright niggas. I don't know who the fuck is who. You know what I'm saying?
Yo. So wait. If it was at Bungalow in Astoria at Aldo's room, shout out to Aldo, then we met through Jillian Cohen.
Right.
That's what it was.
Yeah, because I used to roll with Jillian hard back then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Back in the days.
And I then, know, yeah. Man.
Hmm?
Man, yeah, I know. Jilly was my dog back then.
Yeah, man. We used to always do shows together. We used to be at Brooklyn Exposure, Expressions, Bungalow Lounge. What was the other joint she had in Astoria? Albatross. That was another venue. She used to work there. She was the bartender there.
I remember the name, but I remember she, is that the gay bar she used to do?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yep, and the manager was Michael. Michael was mad cool.
Yo, I remember when she booked us on that show, you know, my old southern ass ain't used to going to no room for, and that type of environment, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I remember I was just thinking in my head, because I think I had some relationship bits, and I was like scared to do them. I was like, is this going to make any sense? And then, you know, I did the bits, and it was actually a really good show.
You know was that one in the daytime or was it in the nighttime? Do you remember?
If I'm not mistaken, because I kind of remember the sun a little bit, I think it darkened
it
as
daytime.
We were there.
Okay. See, yeah, that was a good show. Because I remember the first one I did, it was atrocious, man. And she wasn't hosting that time. It was somebody else. But I remember some comic went on stage and was like shouting out everything in the room. He was like, shout out to the host. Shout out to the tiles. Shout out to the ceiling fan. Shout out to the poster. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Was that me?
No, it was not you.
I'm about to say, that sounds like some stuff I used to do in my early days.
No, most definitely was not you. This person, the funny thing is, the person has been doing stand-up longer than you and I. And I thought it was the funniest shit in the world. And you know how comics, you piggyback off of that when you go on?
Yeah.
Like, yo, shout out to the last comic that was up. He was thanking the stars, the moon, everything.
Right.
No, but I do. Yeah, I remember the one that we did, and it was like, yeah, like you said, it was.
Hayne do a set. Right, he gave an homage.
Yeah, it was. I was. It was crazy. That shit was crazy. And then I know we always used to do Identity Bar like 6 days a week. Me, you, Derek, and David every week, because I was helping Tino with it. Everybody like, yo, that's Justin's mic too. No, it wasn't. I was just doing the music. And I will perform later on in the damn open mic. Back in the days.
No, that's
I hated that mic.
You know what? Now, second thought, maybe we did connect there, because I remember that actually, and I remember that.
And it was, yeah, and it was funny too, because a lot of people didn't even know I was a comic. They just thought I was helping Tino. I'm like, no, I actually do comedy. And I remember it, man. Folks used to give me shit like, yo, you don't be doing no shows. I'd be like, I do more shows than you niggas. The fuck you talking about?
Boy, that was the no.
Yeah, that was the no era. That no shit, guys. Let's be nice and shit. We got snacks in the back. We got cookies.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the snacks. He used to always have the snacks at the open mic, yo.
Yo, he had cookies. He had freaking fruits, remember?
Derek Thompson. I think we used to be eating all the snacks. He's like, hey,
we
man,
all did.
You got to save something for the other comics.
We used to get tight.
Yeah, yo, but back then, we were so broke.
Come ahead, eat all the snacks.
Bro, I don't know what to tell you.
Because none of us, I don't know about you, I think you were the only one working at that time. I don't remember, though. I know I wasn't. David wasn't, and me, David, DT, and a lot of other comedians in that particular summer when we all met,
yeah,
we weren't working then, which is why we was everywhere. We was at every show, every Identity Bar mic. We was all over the place.
I was working and still at every show, man. I can't even.
Yeah, you was working for crack of dawn.
I used to be wore out back then.
You was working early in the morning. I remember.
Yeah, in the morning, so like, I'd be sleep at the mic. But like, yeah, yo, back yeah, then, yeah, I wouldn't, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't go home though. I would not go
yeah,
home.
Yep, yeah, yep, yeah. And this was super, super skinny Quan. You was mad skinny. I was like, yo, who is this kid?
Now, I wasn't skinny yet. When you first met me, I don't think I was skinny yet.
Maybe after a while.
I think it was like that next year when, I don't know what it was that happened that next year, but I think that's when I started to think.
Started getting slim. Yeah, because I used to have you come through the Brooklyn Exposure and wherever else Marlon had his rooms.
Yeah.
And we used to be everywhere. We were raw.
No, I remember we used to be everywhere Marlon went back then. I remember.
Yes.
That.
Yep. Yep. So it was what? Inkwell, Green City.
Yeah.
Brooklyn Exposure. What was the place he had in Jersey? Boca Grande.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yep. And then the other place out
Jordan
in Queens,
Lounge.
The place out in Queens, the dining hall out
oh,
in Queens.
Oh, shit. I forgot the name of it right now. It started with an M, right? Damn.
I can't even remember. I just remember it was like a Jamaican spot right outside of it.
Yeah. 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 Now, I can't remember the name of that spot. That place, one of them is still there that he used to do. It was like a ballroom type thing where they would rent out for baby showers and you know, receptions.
And he had another ballroom somewhere else in Queens.
It was two of them.
Right, mm-hmm. It's right. Okay, I think I remember the one with the Jamaican spot, but it was another one too.
Yeah, it was. I can't remember their names right now. Damn. But yeah, back then, comparing 2020 and the beginning of this new year, 2021, right, to back then, we had shows every night. There was nights we could do three rooms in the same night.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like that right now. Sucks.
I know, man. Yeah, just talking about it, man. What? Every once in a while, I go back and look at a tape, and I'll just forget, like, man, we really used to do this. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. I was talking to this girl about it. And I was like, yo, I probably did comedy maybe like 5-6 times last year, if that. And I was like, in comparison to when it was hot, I was like, yo, if you took 2 days off from comedy, you felt like you were starting all over.
Yes.
That's how intense this shit was, how hard
yes.
being to
me. Yes.
I'm like, yo, this is crazy.
Yeah.
We taking months in between sets. No, like, what?
You felt like you didn't have it no more. Yo, so, okay, when did you start comedy?
I started, if my memory is correct, somewhere around December 2009.
Oh, so you got a year ahead of me. Okay.
Yeah, this was back in North Carolina and when I was in college or whatever.
Yeah. So, was it something you always wanted to do, or how did that come about?
No, it wasn't necessarily something I always wanted to do. I just, personally, I was like, the whole football thing for me in college didn't work out. Yeah. But, I'm just in college just trying to figure stuff out or whatever. And, I was a silly kid or whatever, just always acting crazy. And I was like, in the bottom of my heart, I wanted to be a comedic actor or whatever. And, I never really thought about stand-up. I was like, I can't be...
Same.
Like a Cat Williams, or who was hot at the time was like Cat Williams. Who else was hot at the time? A lot of the guys from, like, I feel like Comic View, like that shit talking class of people.
Yeah,
I just didn't feel like I was like that, you know what I mean? And I was like, I can't do stand up. And I don't know, I can't even remember why, but for whatever reason, just one year in college, I just put it on my things to try out that year. I was like, I'm gonna try to do stand up this year. And the friends around me were supportive of the idea, and people started like letting me like practice jokes in the student union, like, just to the table or whatever. And then at the end of that year, I just tried it, and then I never stopped.
Word. Yeah, because you moved here. Did you move here before 2013, or was it 2013?
I moved here in 2012, but in 2012, man, 2012. I was so confused by the damn city. I just didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
Because, I'm from the South, and we don't, it's not many comedy clubs. But there are like a decent amount of open mics, but back home, open mics are shows, basically.
Yes,
because of the audience. So I got here, and I was, the open mics and the shows is just two different things here, and I was kind of lost in that open mic world that first year. Like, and I was bombing. I was like, nigga, these jokes are good. I was just killing with them. And I was like, why am I bombing? But then I realized, oh, you're playing a room full of comics that ain't paying you no mind.
Exactly.
So I didn't know that until like the next year when I started getting introduced to shows.
Yeah. And they only laugh when you fuck up a joke. You be like, whoa, that wasn't the part.
Right, they laugh at your comment, and I'm like, man, I'm about to mass shoot the shit out of all you niggas. Y'all got me feeling like this.
Back then, you go to the creek, and these motherfuckers laughing at the corny shit and going, hey ho. I'm like, yeah, what the fuck is this? Hey ho.
Yeah,
bullshit.
That hey-o. Yeah,
that
little thing.
Yeah, that
hey-o. Yeah, nah, that shit. That was very creek, weird though. Days, man. But I remember seeing, what's the girl that she blew up? I can't even remember her name at all, but she has red hair. She's done like the Correspondence Dinner. She has like a few specials.
Oh, yeah, the girl that was on Girl Code.
I'm not sure if she was on Girl Code, but I know she did the President's was Correspondence Dinner. She has like a special on Netflix.
Oh, you talking about Kate?
Maybe. I can't remember her name, but I just remember seeing her at a mic there like years ago.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I see her on TV like,
no, it's not Kate. It's somebody else.
Yeah, I can't remember her name.
Yeah. Me neither, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but yeah.
I do know you're talking
about. Yeah, I remember seeing all those people there back way back then at the creek. Who else used to be there that I saw? Mark Norman,
yeah, he used to be there.
And you knew he was going to be, dope because of that voice. You know what I'm saying? So when he started talking, you're like, oh, this is about to be funny.
yeah man, good times at the creek, man. I had some fun times there. I was sad when they closed last year.
I know,
I was like, damn,
bro. I mean,
crazy.
That's what's crazy about the pandemic, man. It's basically like everything that we knew as our world or comedy scene world here in New York is done. And, I feel like a lot of us are kind of just waiting for things to normalize and go back to that world, but that world is done, man. And when you see a closing of a venue like that that's always been there, it just makes that more reality,
Yeah. Even like that. Well, okay, so Dangerfields, they made a statement. They said that they're not permanently closed. They're just closed. They closed the original location, which is there since the late 70s, which is crazy. Because it's like, it's fucking Rodney Dangerfield's club. How does this place fold? hopefully they can come back. I hope it's not like, well, it's temporary, and then it ends up being like for good, because that's crazy.
Well, I mean, hopefully, you know, Cuomo gets a plan in place to kind of help businesses reestablish themselves and adjust safely to this COVID environment. That's kind of what everybody's waiting on. That's why they're shutting down, because they're like, I don't know what to do. I feel like, in my opinion, I get it. Safety, don't want the hospital to be overrun. But I feel like that they've handled these shutdowns very sloppily. And
I agree. Sloppy,
they've just destroyed the whole economy of New York. So this is going to be very interesting.
Yep. Yeah, because it doesn't make sense. Like, look what we're reduced to now. They're doing, I'm not doing them, but comics are doing shows in the park, shows on the curb, shows on the rooftop, you know? If it's live performances, that's what they're reduced to. And if you're not doing that, you're either traveling outside of the state or going to Long Island, because Long Island is fully open. There's a capacity limit, yes, but they haven't stopped any of the indoor events.
And that, you know, again, this is a thing, and I think the experts said at the beginning, I was like, hey, man, this ain't just going away. This going to be with us for at least a good 2 years minimum.
Yeah,
and
of course.
So I just feel like we have to adjust to dealing with it. You know what I'm saying? We can't just be like, all right, we're just going to hold down until it go away, because it's just, that's just not, unfortunately, that's just not how it's going to go.
Nope, we got to adapt.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, everything else is digital now. Everything is virtual. Comedy shows on Zoom, on Facebook Live, on Facebook Watch.
Right. Dude, all the podcasting, all shows are on that now, man. Like, the Breakfast Club is a Zoom. Zoom show. And watching The View, these are Zoom shows. Stephen Colbert, these are Zoom shows. The Daily Show, they're all
Zoom shows.
Everything
is
a Zoom show now, which is, it's very interesting. What's that show? I think it's America's Got Talent. Is that the one that Terry Crews was hosting?
Yeah.
You saw how they had the audience was essentially a Zoom, or whatever platform they use was basically like a Zoom audience. Like, nobody was there.
Yeah, just the same with the NBA, same with WWE and some boxing events.
Oh, the NBA did the digital audience? Okay, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, the NBA does the digital audience.
I would assume WWE's
doing that.
Be in those audiences, I assume.
No. No, it's free. They just sign up via Twitter.
I'm about to say, I'd like rather just watch it on TV. I don't feel like fucking.
Yeah, me too.
You staring at my face.
I don't want to be a head. Yeah, I don't want to be that face there cheering from my living room. Like, that's just, it looks.
Yeah,
weird.
they got that shit looking like Demolition Man. You don't remember that part?
Exactly. Yeah.
Where they had everybody on the TV, then look, when they was walking around, the TVs was turning like they was heads.
Yeah. Demolition Man. What's your boggle?
Be well.
Yeah, that movie is silly. What's your boggle? Nah.
And that movie had Queen Sandra Bullock in it. Can't forget her.
Oh, yeah. She bad. Still bad. Bad. Still bad. I forgot. Yo, you know, did you know that?
Yo, wait. Let me stop. Let me stop playing. Let me say. Let me say. The talented Sandra Bullock, but somebody gonna heard me call her queen. Like, why the fuck you calling me?
But you know what's so funny? Did you know that T.K. Kirkland used to be her manager when she first started out?
You mean her security?
No, he was. He said that he managed.
Wasn't he doing security during that time period?
I don't know.
I feel like
he said that on Vlad, he said he managed
doing security at that point, or somewhere around that.
But there's also an interview. Maybe. There's also an interview though on Vlad where he said he used to manage her, and I'm like, really? Okay. Interesting. But who knows? You know,
I mean, but he's also interesting when you have someone who's been around for decades.
Yeah.
Man, who's to say what they done touched? You know
I mean, he's 60, you know? He's not a young man. He's basically 60 years old. He's like 57, 58. He's pushing 60 if he ain't 60 already. He's been around the block. You never know. You never know, man. T to the motherfucker.
Yeah, that cat funny.
Hooray.
Yeah, that cat funny. But he be halfway preaching doing his set, man.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He like, you need to get your shit together.
He does. He said, you want to go over to a bitch house? You ain't even got no suitcase. You showing up to the bitch door. Said,
you don't
with
deserve a
bag.
Woman. You got at least $20,000 in the bank. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That got funny.
You showing up to the bitch house with garbage bags. You ain't even got no motherfucking
that
suitcase.
That got funny, man.
Okay. All right. So we known each other for a few years, right? What would you say, in your opinion, till this day, is the roughest room in New York City?
Off the top of my head, because honestly, I stopped doing the rough rooms a while ago. But off the top of my head, I'm going to go with, I think it's called Expressions, that Dale Harrison used to have.
Oh! In the Bronx, yeah, that Dell, LaRon, or sometimes
Don Jenkins. Between
Don eventually took it over.
Right, I remember when he took it over. Right, between Expressions and Footprints. But fortunately for me, I never got on stage at Footprints.
Well, God bless. Cause
I just remember watching them just stare at people, bro. And that shit was... Who was on stage that night, I think? The host was up there.
Freddie
was up there. And they was just staring and eating their food and... Yeah, you saw him fucking with people, and whoever was the comic that went on after that, it was just he wasn't even in the room. It was almost like, you know, you go to Chili's restaurant when you're down south, and they got like that country music in the background, but you don't even hear it. That's like how they would treat the comedian, just like background music. And I was just like, he's talking to y'all, like the fuck,
you know. So the first time I did it, I kept hearing about the Godfather music. And they was like, yo, if you bomb, he plays the Godfather music and does this Italian mobster character. And that happened to me the very first time. I remember Hope Flood was in town. And this was back when I used to co-host with Marlon at Brooklyn Exposure. So I finished hosting at Exposure and I get over to Expressions, and Hope Flood was like, yo, before I go on, there's a comic coming through. So she like told them to hold the spot down till I got there. So I get on. I think I'm gonna murder this shit. Get on, man. That was the worst 5 minute set ever. And then I get off and the Godfather music comes on and I'm like, oh, like I wasn't even mad because I was hype. I was like, oh, that's what they talking about. And he gets on stage and goes, you know, sometimes, kid, it doesn't work out. You come up here with your 5 minutes thinking you're going to kill the room and it doesn't work out. And you hear the shit in the back.
Yo, man. Yo, shout out to Freddie Rich, man, because the few times I've
had
a chance to see him work, like that dude is a hidden talent, if you ask me.
Oh yeah!
Like they ready a season 3? They definitely do have Freddie Riggs up there.
Yeah, characters for days, voices for days, great storytelling.
I know, dude. I mean, the voice he hits you with, you be like, "Why in the fuck is this hood ass Caribbean dude from the Bronx?
Yep.
Why is he doing this shit?" But I mean,
he's doing redneck.
Anything, bro.
Anything, any voice.
It's damn near like a one man show when you watch them do the set.
Yeah, yep. I agree with you. Yeah, Footprints to me is the hardest room still. Expressions. The thing with Expressions was like they had to get to used to you. So like you go there and come. Me, I was going there every week. So like after the fourth time I did the show, they was like, "Fuck it, this kid keep coming back. We gonna give him a shot." And then you know I was always doing well every time I went. I even fucking headline there by default. I was supposed to be the feature one night. This was when Don Jenkins took over. And I was booked to be the feature. And I forgot who was supposed to close. They didn't show up. So they let me close. And then it was crazy because I still did the amount of time as a feature because some shit went down where they overbooked the venue. And it was a party. And the lady who was doing the party after the comedy show didn't bring the people she said she was gonna bring. Like none of her people that bought tickets for her party showed up. So she started the whole thing like before I even got on stage. She was like, "I'm in a blood clot, please. I'm in a blood clot. You know, give me my money." And I was like, "What the fuck?" And then,
I thought you were just doing a song.
On.
That was her voice. God damn.
No, that was her voice. She was a short a Jamaican lady wilding at like fucking midnight, because you know that show used to run late. So I get on stage, yo, no lie, I'm on stage for 6 minutes. I forget the owner's name right now. He's an old, mad cool, old Jamaican dude, came right over the dog, and I could hear him because, you know, the host used to sit right by the stage. He was like, yo, tell Justin he good, man. Yo, give him the money, tell him say good nights. I was like, what? So Don hands me the money while I'm on stage, mid-joke, and goes, yo, say good night. And I was like, all right, good night, y'all. And the crowd was like, no, because they wanted the show.
Damn.
Man. The good old days. I miss expressions, I remember, man.
You ever, like, get on stage every once in a while? You kind of just see the eyes in the crowd. And you could tell a few takes. It's like, okay, he kind of cute. And then you bomb. And you see their face just like, and they just turn around and turn it back to you like,
Yeah.
That happened to me at Expression one night. I remember when I first came, I was like, hey, Quan. And then I just started bombing. And I was just, you know, because in my head, I'm like, yo, I'm going to try to bag that after my set. And then, after you bomb, it's like, nah, ain't no point in bringing that energy. Queen, so you know what I'm saying? Like, babe, what is she gonna say? I'm gonna act like, yo, you still, I gotta ask her to believe in me. You know what I'm saying? Like, she gotta have faith. I can't pull her with charm now. Like, she's gotta have faith that I can do better.
God, that's fucking funny. So, okay, so. I know the answer to part of this question, but who were your inspirations in stand-up? Who inspired you?
In the beginning? My inspirations were probably was clearly Eddie Murphy. That's my idol. Kevin Hart was definitely in there in the beginning, because for me, I feel like all the comics was like, what I would perceive is, like I said, that shit talking, I'm gonna tell like it is, you know, the Don DC Currys, the Cat Williams, you know what I'm saying? That style. And Kevin Hart was up there somewhere like, ah, I'm a bitch. And, you know, just more like regular guy stuff. And I was like, I relate to that. So Kevin Hart in that vein, and he was the hot comic at the time as well when I started. But so it would be Eddie, Kevin, and then Martin Lawrence and Jamie Foxx. Those are people that I just grew up watching and just thinking like, man, these people are like doing everything that I just wish I could do all day. You know what I'm saying? From the characters to the voices to the remember when I first started, I used to be wild over the top. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That was because my influence
super
was
super high energy.
You know what I'm saying? And I would come to the stage with that energy. You know, eventually I kind of was able to focus that into my own thing. But yeah, those people were the people that inspired me, though, just at the start of it.
I remember too, you when you first came here, and you used to do like Brooklyn Exposure, and you would do your stuff, and it would depend on the night too, because we didn't always have great shows there. Even the you know, me and Marlon as the host, we didn't always have great nights. So like on the fucked up nights, your Quan would be up there, be like, oh, y'all not fucking with me,
man. I don't know what I say. I just know when it would be good. Again, you look out there and see all those. Because Marlon had like the cool crowd. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He had the crowd. You're like, man, I want to party with them after the show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. They
so
was
you
cool.
Look and see them faces smiling at you. You felt good. But then when it won't, you're like, no, I want to be cool with y'all. Like, laugh, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But yeah, I definitely remember that. I had my nights, man. I had my nights where it was hitting, and I had the nights when it wasn't.
Yo, that shit used to be funny.
I remember back then I used to dance and everything. I remember I don't know what it was called, but I think we used to call it jigging was a thing back then. And like, you know, that little shoulder move they used to do to like My Dougie and Pretty Boy Swag and all those type of songs.
I remember that
shit
came
on one night, and I was doing that shit, and they was like, hey, and I was like, okay, they on my side. I gotta keep them. I gotta keep them. I gotta keep them right here. That's how I used to be back then, like very nervous. Like, okay, I got them right here. Gotta hold them. Gotta hold them. Gotta hold them. I'd be running scared back then.
Have you You watch any specials lately?
I watched all the Day Readies. That might be the newest thing I watched that I can remember.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I think it's the newest thing. I definitely watch like a lot of older stuff nowadays, at least though.
Yeah, I watch a lot of older stuff. So I watched all of it of Day Ready, Tiffany Haddish Presents. But yo, it's so crazy because so my favorite ones were with Barbara Carlisle, Tony Woods, Dean Edwards, and of course Godfrey. But when I'm watching Tony, I kept thinking about the night we hung out with him till 4 a.m.
Wait, was I there or was that one of the nights when it was Dave and Dave?
You was there. It was the four of us. Me, you, David, DT, and we hung out with him till 4 in the morning. I'm almost positive he was there.
Was this in Manhattan or Brooklyn? Because I remember him coming Manhattan. In town a few times and hanging out with him.
The time I hung out with all of them, we were in Manhattan. We started at the cellar, and we ended up at the Black Fat Pussycat right after till like 4 in the fucking morning. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember because he's a really nice guy. Tony Woods is a really nice guy.
Absolutely,
you know, younger comic, newer. He's just gonna be nice. Let him hang around.
Yeah, he's cool as hell.
Be nice. Now I remember we broke his shit. And I remember one night I was I can't remember who I was. I just know Derek was there. And Tony was like, "Hey man, y'all want something to drink?" And I was like, I was at the shot. He's like, "Come on, man, you want some drink? I got you." Because I was like, "Okay, in that case." And then it was like, "What you want?" And I was like, "Cause I had seen him drinking before, right? And I seen what he got." And I'm like, "Let me get the Grand Marnier." And he was like, "This nigga here, you gonna ask for the OG drink? You gonna ask for the top shelf shit? This nigga." You know what I'm saying? I ain't know. And I was just like, "Oh, my bad. Never mind. I don't want it." He's like, "Nah, I'll get you the Grand Marnier." And I was so embarrassed, bro. I was so embarrassed, but that shit was good as hell.
He went for the top shelf.
I ain't know. I was like, top I mean, I ain't know how what cost what. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't afford drinks, so I just was like, liquor. You know what I mean? But chilling with him and seeing what he was drinking, I was like, "I saw y'all niggas with the Grand Marnier. I want one, too."
Yeah, I remember the time I met him. You know, DT introduced me, and we was all hanging out there. And he sees me, and he goes, "You look like Shane Fultz." I was like, "Oh shit, not this again!" Because someone else has told me that I look like Shane Fultz.
Oh, comedian Shane. Okay. Yeah. I never knew his last name.
Yeah, so he brings me inside the cellar to meet the owner and goes, "This is Shane Fultz, sir. Meet Justin." And I was like, what the fuck? And it was funny because Greer Barnes is there, Sherrod Smalls is there, and these guys know me, you know what I mean? Harris Stanton, fucking, I forget who else was there, Artie Fuqua, and they're all looking like, "That's Justin, what the fuck is this nigga talking about?" So then he takes me back outside, he goes, "You see? Now you can get in the club."
Yo, I'm like, "What?" Dumb, bro.
Yo, it was so funny, man. Fucking hilarious.
Man, Greer, that's an OG too, man. Something about Greer. I did that competition.
Cool.
No, Greer, very nice guy. And a monster on that stage. His shit is so smooth and so like, man, that was fucking great. That's all you can say when he gets off stage. That was fucking great. But,
yeah, man.
I did the competition at New York Comedy Club a couple years back. Right, you know, my burn in the city was like, at this point, you know, so I'm like, "Man, let me do this competition, you know, help get that respect around the city a little bit." And so, you know, to me, I'm like, "Man, this competition means everything." And so we're on the finals night, and I'm going over my jokes in my head. And I'm trying to remember like what to do, whatever. If you saw me, I'm visibly nervous. Eagle Wit sees me, he's like, "Yo, man, you gotta do good." he was like, "The future of the Black comedy community is on your shoulders." And Greer Barnes saw him say that, and he just looked at me and was like, "Yeah, nigga." And I wanted to laugh, but I was so nervous I couldn't, bro.
Yo, that's the funniest shit.
I was so nervous I couldn't even laugh, but it was so funny.
Yo.
That's funny, man. That sounds similar to the night. Okay, you remember Lloyd the Comedian, right? Yeah. From Jersey. Yeah, that was my dude. R.I.P. So we went to Jersey. We went to his wake and everything. And then after, there were two tribute shows, right? One was at Brightside Tavern. Mimi Simpson had that room at the time. So I did that show. And then I had another show at New York Comedy Club. And it was two shows on one night. And all of the ticket proceeds went to his family and, you know, his pregnant fiance or whatever at the time, right? And this is when Matt Richards is like blowing up, right? You know, he's on MTV, he's doing his thing, right? And Matt comes there because Matt was supposed to headline. And he brings 50 Cent with him to the fucking comedy club, right? And I'm about to go on. Kenny Warren is about to introduce me. And Imagine is there in the corner, right? So Imagine fucking comes over to me and he's like, yo, you know, pay your respects. Shout out Lord, shout out his family. Because 50 Cent is right there. So everything that you got that's good, you better leave it on that fucking stage. Because you never know. You make 50 Cent laugh, that could be your career. I'm like, all right, Imagine. Yo, go up and do it, Papa.
Fucking Imagine, man.
Y'all ripped that show too, man. 5 minutes. Yo, at 4 minutes, the fucking owner, Emilio, is telling Kenny to get me off because Matt is ready to go on. And I said, I love that. Because that's how you know you're doing good. When the cat that's, you know, on TV, that's basically on, right? Because you and I always use that word a lot. Me, you, and David's trying to get on, man. The nigga that's on is like nervous because you killing. And I was like, oh, I know I did good. 50 laughed and Matt wants me off stage. Beautiful. Let's do it again. Those are the good days, man. But, okay, so what's my next question? How do you feel? Oh, I'm trying to say this without being mean. How do you feel about these, I can't call them comedians because we're comedians. These Instagram influencers who think they are funny doing these skits that they're doing nowadays, and these guys and girls are, you know, getting booked for stand-up comedy shows when we know that they're just people that do skits and pranks and stuff online. Like, how do you feel about that as a comedian?
I mean, it's layered, man, because it is a slap in the face to work at the craft of stand-up and mm-hmm. or comedy in general. I feel like this is an industry-wide thing where people will do comedy projects, but they won't hire comedy specialists. Like, they'll do sketch mm-hmm. shows and won't be no comedians. Won't be no comedians or improv people on the show. You're like, ain't this a dramatic actor? Like, okay. And then, you know, so even with that, you know, you work on it, and then they hire all the people that don't do stand-up, which it's annoying, but it's also acknowledging, like, it's always about who got the name, who gonna sell the tickets. And the business of comedy is just something that we gotta accept, and it's unfortunate, but a promoter or venue owner is always gonna go with whoever sell tickets. They could give a damn about how good you are, and even with the way the business work, man, you'd be surprised how much being good is not related to success. You know what I mean?
And yes.
Over time, you start to say, "Hey, being good is only for you. That's it, and your personal goals. That's for you. That's what being good is for. But being successful is a whole other thing." You know what I mean? About getting yourself in positions to have opportunity, you know? And then also,
right.
I can never remember the dude's name. You know that dude that wrote that book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Shit. Oh man, it's slipping my neck.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. But he has this book, if I'm not mistaken, it's called like Quadrants or something like that. And the book was just talking about like mentality and whatever, and how everybody's taught, hey, you want to get a job, you got to go to college. And you go to college, you're going to get a good job. So don't worry about this debt because you're going to get a good job or whatever that you accrue from college. And how saying that was a truth in like the mid-1900s, where going to college guaranteed you success in life. But and that was called essentially the industrial age. But that's no longer true. We have a bunch of college graduates nowadays who can't get jobs. You know what I'm saying? So going to college doesn't guarantee a success anymore. And so that mold of thinking is a dying process. As the information age moves in, the things that you do to be successful in life are more so moving online or they're involved technology or whatever. And so I see that as comedy, right? Because by the time I moved to New York, everybody back home got on TV. I moved to New York, and I used to run into Darren Brand, Chico Bean, and B-Dot, or whatever. And it was another guy, Burpee, and another guy, Osama Been Drinking, right? They had a crew called... I can't remember the name of it, but they used to do a live show in Greensboro, North Carolina, or whatever. And so I say, hey, man, I'm going to New York because I want to be on TV. And I'm here for a couple years. And then one year, Chico Bean gets wilding out. And I'm in New York City. I had no idea about they were even casting. And then the following year, I think B-Dot got on. Then the next year, Darren Brand got on. And so it would be times I would go home and people like, yeah, man, you in New York trying to get on TV. But, oh, Darren on TV in Durham. You need to hang with him. And I was, it was frustrating in that moment because I'm like, nigga, I moved to New York to be on TV. And everybody in North Carolina is on TV. Now, also during this time period, the King Batches got popping. Rennie,
right.
DC Young Fly. And so reading that book put it into perspective. I was like, oh shit, I pursued a dying industry.
Yes.
I pursued a dying industry. And that's just the reality of it.
Right.
Because people are doing what we do online and being successful at it. You know, and we're trying to do this old school formula of coming up in the ranks. Coming up in the ranks. And that's great.
Yeah.
But for success and your name, not necessarily. I feel like doing things online is very important. So as far as these internet comedians or whatever, the industry changed and it just changed in our face.
Yeah, definitely. And I think
that's just the reality that we've all
really fucking did, especially
during this pandemic. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's an internet comedian now. You know what I'm saying? You can't be like, oh, you fucking motherfuckers, get on the stage. You can't say that. You can't do that little speech no more. You know what I mean? Because if you want to survive, you gotta get your ass on the internet. You know? So I think that's just basically what happened. Our industry changed while we was chasing the old industry and it just left. Mid pursuit, but it changed on our watch. You know what I'm saying? Because had we been like maybe 5 years older or anything, we probably still could have got into when that was the business mode. But the industry changed while we was doing it. It was like, come on, man.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely agree with that. It definitely changed while we were, on our watch, just like you said. That makes perfect sense, actually.
I know, man. It's like, come on, man. God damn. But, you know, at this point, I'm so deep into it that I'm, like, acknowledging that, hey, I have to figure out something on the internet. But I'm also like, man, I'm still a fan of traditional stand-up.
Stand-up.
You know what I mean? The old school format of the setup, punchline, jokes take you on a journey. So, I'm still a fan of that. So, the intent is to figure out, I'm still trying to figure out how do I do that pure art form of the stand-up that I fell in love with, but position myself to be successful within the way the industry is now.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, that makes perfect sense. Was that? That's cool. Y'all changed everything, but this was still my dream. So it's like, hey, how do I adjust, basically?
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. What? Okay, so you said you performed 5 times last year. That's around the amount of shows I did last year as well. Have you done?
Yeah, I did one so like little business tent show or whatever. The bar had like a tent. I did one show there, and I did one Zoom show. I got another Zoom show tonight. But hey, man, I've been sitting around, you know, writing and watching tapes and studying and thinking about stand up, and I'm just tired of thinking about it at this point, man. I'm like, all right, man, I gotta get out there somehow, some way. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I'm gonna try to be as careful as possible. You know, I ordered the little mic condoms. Waiting on them to come in. Some gloves and some hand sanitizer and stuff like that. You know, I try to stay away from everybody at the show, which is the hardest part. Because, you know, we're seeing all our buddies.
Oh, very hard.
We roll with every day. We haven't seen in a while, so it's hard.
Very hard.
I'm just really trying to force myself just to stay away from everybody. Because I just been away too long, man. It's tough, so.
It's very tough, man. I miss it, man. I miss the spotlight. You know what I'm saying? I miss that hot ass spotlight being on you and people looking at you. I miss all of that. That interaction with the audience and everything about it.
Birth of a new joke, man. That was probably the best part. Probably the best part.
Exactly. See? There you go. Yes. That's what I miss the most. What you just said right there, the birth of a new joke. I miss that the most, for real. Seriously, man. But it's going to get back to normal. Yeah. Man. It really is. It really is, man. Oh, look at that. We got 50 minutes. I think we good. I think this is good. Like, we definitely got to do a part 2, a part 3, because we could talk all day.
That's a fact. We damn near been much talking anyway.
That's what the show is, you know? It's just a conversation between two comedy brothers. But it was great having you on this show. Appreciate you as always. Yo, people, this is my boy Quan Wiggins. This is my brother from another mother. Okay? But the next time we on this show, we're gonna talk about
how they can see you, they be like, hey, man, you funny. I was about to go at you. You beat me to it.
We can do it real quick right now.
You got it.
If you want to. First time you met me, ladies and gentlemen, he goes, man, you ain't even black like that. Yo, you Puerto Rican. I'm like, all right, man, black and Puerto Rican. My mom's is black. No. And then Quan used to go through this whole thing about how, because we lived in the North, we ain't know shit about black history.
You don't even know about the many black Wall Streets throughout black communities in America. All you know about is Tulsa.
But that's how it started. He said something to me one day. I swear we was going to Expressions because we was on the train forever and we was going back and forth. And he said something. He was like, man, y'all know shit up north. Y'all know nothing. I said, okay, what about 1920 Tulsa riots? And you was like, what? What's that? And I told you, and then you didn't say nothing. After that day, he left me alone. Then, fast forward, sometime in the summer, he sees my mom for the first time. And I think this is when my mom started growing her dreads out, or she had cut her hair and she was growing, she didn't start her dreads yet, but she was growing out, you know, going all natural, you know, teen natural. And Quan taps me on the shoulder at the mic. He goes, bruh, like, your mom is black, for real.
That's not my voice, y'all that's listening. I don't know whose voice he's doing. He sound like Mike from the Wood.
And I go, I told you. Yeah, right? I'm from North Carolina. No, but it was funny because I'm like, I told you that my mom's was black. I said, yo, she light skinned, my grandmother is. I said, but I got every flavor in my family. Like, we every shade of brown and light brown and yellow and all of that. But when you saw her, I guess you saw her hair and her features, and you was like, yo, your mom's is really black.
I mean, funny shit. I'll say this. What's interesting, the black experience actually is different recently. It's very interesting, man, the things that I feel like that are important to us, the lessons about, you know, Black colleges and my hometown, Durham, North Carolina, which is called Black Wall Street, which is very interesting. That's why when you told me about Tulsa, I was like, what are you talking about? Because I grew up in Black Wall Street. But then over time, you start learning, there were many, you know, or several. I don't know how many exactly, but there were several bustling communities that had their own demises because of racism or whatever. So that was that. And then even being here, you know, I'm from North Carolina. It's black and white. And that's it. Hey, I'm Dominican. That makes you black. You know what I mean? In North Carolina.
Exactly.
Yeah, but in North Carolina, it looks weird when you got an afro. I remember I had this Dominican guy that I grew up with. He's always been telling me. I remember in sixth grade, I ain't know no better. I was ignorant. And I remember he used to always talk to white girls. I was like, hey, man, why are you talking to white girls? And he looked at me, he was like, dude, I'm not black. But he had an afro, which was like, huh? I was so confused. But then, you know, fast forward to living in New York and just seeing how all the diverse communities here, some of my thinking on blackness and race and culture is clearly expanded. You know what I mean? So the way I have thought at that point is not the same because I have new information. So.
Oh, yeah. Of course. It's a melting pot here, man. Everything, we have every nationality here. We got every different type of food here, and most of it is in Queens.
But even beyond, that's where everybody lives. You said that was most the important borough. Word is nationality, right? Because I feel like you kind of call it's a very American thing to do sometimes. You categorize people by their skin only. You know what I mean? You might be it's a lot of Arab people, but then you go wait. There's Egyptians. There's people from Saudi Arabia. There's people from Iraq, and then you begin to give people their cultural identity or their country of origin identity, which is very interesting because you know where I grew up and you know again the basis of America is like that's your skin, so that's who you are. But then you start to realize that it's more nuances within that, you know. And New York is a perfect example of it all being in just one city.
Yeah, man. It's true. And not only that, yo, we the motherfucking mecca of comedy, baby. Everybody want to be a comedian here. They move from that's other states
came.
Like my
I mean,
man.
That's why
phone.
I came, man. I don't, low key, I don't know if them documentaries might have tricked me, man. You know how they always did them comedy documentaries? But, I mean, like, New York is the mecca of comedy. Everybody comes to New York. But if I had never seen those, I might not have had this. I probably would have moved to Atlanta instead. With those documentaries is what got me up here.
Yeah, I mean, New York is like that for music. It's like that for radio, you know, and stand up. This is where it is, and even for Broadway. Like, you know what I'm saying? You want to be you come to New York. You want to be on radio? You come to New York. You want to be a comedian? You come to New York. See? You know what I'm saying? That's why the song hit so hard.
I need to change it to Durham. I need to hit up who was that, Alicia?
And how would the Durham one go? It'd be like, we got dirt roads and that's tomatoes.
No, that's not a Durham. No.
We got fat back.
We got murders. Motherfuckers jumping on the train. Playing the slap game. I mean, the knockout game. They will slash you. Taxi drivers, no driving to Brooklyn. Cause you black. And the rent is high. And your apartment ain't nothing but a closet. I go on all day.
White folks moving in and complaining. Anyway. Yo, y'all. Yo, thank you guys for tuning in. It's my boy Quan Wiggins on the the show today. And I'm Justin Ramos. This has been another episode of Justin Care from Brooklyn. Remember, this show streams everywhere, so keep tuning in. All right.